This is Sports Talk 1240. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Sports Talk 1240 on this Sunday, January 14th, 2018. Broadcasting live from the studios of WGBB 1240 AM and 95.9 FM here in West Babylon, New York. Gary Harding and John Panarese with you for the first hour tonight. And we will be shortly having our guest for the first half hour. His name is Nick Hershon. He had written a book a few years back on the history of the Nassau Coliseum, and there is a new book that he's going to be putting out. It should be coming out, I believe, in December. And it is called We Want Fish Sticks, the Bizarre and Infamous Rebranding of the New York Islanders. And if you are listening or watching the broadcast on sportstalk1240.com and you are checking out the webcam, you will see that I am wearing a lovely Wendell Clark blue fisherman jersey.
Wendell
Clark. Hey, John, what's going on, dude?
I remember those days.
Happy New Year, my friend.
Same year. Same year.
Yeah, it was quite an interesting few years, and we will have Nick on in a couple of minutes. And just to bring up quick news that's going on in the world of sports, it looks like there was a big upset, or a surprise, I should say. Actually, two surprises now when you think about it.
Yeah.
The Jacksonville Jaguars defeated the Pittsburgh Steelers in game one of the NFL playoffs today, and just now, it looks like the New Orleans Saints had defeated the Minnesota Vikings 24-23. They were down
17-0. I think going into the third quarter.
Right. So, you know, Drew Brees, famous for pulling these comebacks. And right now, the Vikings are trying to work themselves towards a field goal at the end of the game. There's 25 seconds left. But we'll see what happens, and we'll check that out in the second half hour. And if you want to call in to talk anything football, hockey-related, what have you, in the second half hour of the show, the number to get in touch with us is 631-888-8811. And our guest has arrived, and we are welcoming Nick Hershon to the show. Nick, it's Gary and John. Happy New Year, and welcome to Sports Talk 1240.
Happy New Year, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yep, and again, we mentioned, about the first book that you wrote about the Nassau Coliseum, but obviously I've been causing a little bit of a stir with some Facebook posts talking about your upcoming book, We Want Fish Sticks, the Bizarre and Infamous Rebranding of the New York Islanders. And Nick, the first question I got to ask is, what made you decide to come out with this book?
Well, I became an Islanders fan just after the Fisherman jersey era. They wore the Fisherman jersey from 1995 to 1997, and I started watching the team a few years after that, and I kept hearing about this unspeakable jersey. We don't talk about it as Islanders fans. It's that bad. It brings back terrible memories of Mike Milbury and Coach Muller and all these players and coaches we'd rather forget. And so naturally, I'm a former journalist, used to be a reporter for the Daily News, and when a journalist hears something like that, something that you can't talk about, that makes you just want to talk about it even more.
I love it.
So I was like, I need to find out what's the real story behind all this, and track down the players and the designers and everybody to kind of tell the story.
And how much time did it take to do the research, and who did you have to reach out to kind of get the ball rolling and get a really good picture of the whole incident?
That you can't make a good picture out of this jersey, John.
Yeah, I mean, it was probably about a year and a half, I would say, from conception to completion, although it's even longer than when you take into account the whole book editing process. I did it as my PhD dissertation, actually, at Ohio University when I was studying out there. And then as far as, getting a hold of people, that was really part of the issue here, is how do you track down all of these hockey players that are now far-flung? Some of them are still living in the Long Island area, but you have guys who are in Russia and Canada and all the way across the world, and just where would you even know how to contact them? So it's scouring social media, LinkedIn messages, Twitter. A lot of them are coaches for our teams elsewhere, and just trying to get a hold of all of these guys and see if they're willing to tell the story, because, it is somewhat a sensitive story to tell. I definitely didn't want to make light of what the players went through, because I think it was a very difficult journey for them, and even the designers. I think there was a lot of good intentions that went behind this, but it just didn't turn out all
well. The direction I think we want to go to, is I'm just sitting here posing, in the studio. tell you, I remember the day that the announcement came. I was actually up in Connecticut. I took my mom to Foxwoods to go play bingo. She was, you know, such a bingo fanatic. And all of a sudden, I looked at I pictured the Daily News at the time, and I'm looking through, and I saw a picture of the logo, and I'm like, oh my God. I was like, all the tradition just went down the drain. So the question is, obviously, I know, you know, that the owners and they wanted to do something different and something fresh. Just give us maybe a quick Cliff Notes version of how that process came about and how they somehow convinced, I guess, the team and the league and everything else to decide to go change the jersey.
Yeah, well, this is what I was trying to do as a historian. Did you want to put these things into context, right? Because what I told you at the start, where people just say, oh, this is a laughable jersey, they just made it with a box of crayons one morning. You want to actually look into the reasons why. And so if you look back in this era, 1988 was when Wayne Gretzky was traded to the L.A. Kings. All of a sudden, L.A. Kings jerseys are the hottest thing to buy. And people never really, the NHL certainly didn't view hockey jerseys as a fashion statement before, but now they suddenly are. Then a few years after that, you have the San Jose Sharks and the Mighty Ducks come into the league with these cartoonish logos that are also flying off the shelf. So you have a team like the Islanders that small market can't really afford to buy the best players in order to get people coming to the arena. They can't really afford upgrades to Napa Coliseum, as we all know. So the next best thing is, well, why don't we go this cartoon logo craze and have some sort of emblem of Long Island that's going to at least sell a lot, and maybe rappers will start wearing it on MTV, and they have these kinds of grand visions of the logo being disseminated widely. They finally arrived on a fisherman as the best symbol of Long Island. From there, it seemed like the owners were so hell-bent on it that whenever they raised it at a meeting, it was going to be kind of hard for the employees to say, no, boss, we think this is a terrible idea, even if they were thinking that. And certainly the players didn't really have a say in it. So everyone kind of just went along and hoped for the best.
So this had absolutely nothing to do with the Gordon's Fisherman, and that it was a marketing stunt, you know, as some of the rumors. I remember very clearly back then going to the Coliseum and having conversations with different season ticket holders, because back then, my brothers and a friend of mine, we had season tickets, and the big chatter was that this was all done for, you know, somebody, one of the owners was involved with the Gordon Fisherman brand or something like that.
Oh, no, that definitely was not the impetus behind it. I mean, of course, the resemblance between the Islanders Fisherman logo and the Gordon Fisherman is hard to miss, and it's kind of amazing that they did, but they didn't really have any focus groups or fan interviews or any sort of a research process before unveiling this logo. If anything, it was also that you got to think about where the Islanders were at that time. In 1993, they have this miraculous run into the playoffs. '94, they make the playoffs, but then they get eliminated by the Rangers in terrible fashion.
Oh, God, I remember all too well.
Yeah, so humiliating. And so the owners at that time felt that fans started to associate the original Islanders logo more with the terrible loss to the Rangers than they did with the Stanley Cup dynasty, which is highly disputable, right?
Most
fans will still say, I look at that logo, I think Bob Nystrom and Dennis Potvin and Clark Gillies and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But they were worried that the brand needed a refreshing. And so let's get away from this sort of logo of the losing of the last few years and change it up. But no, there was no made with Gordon's or anything like that. No, I know there was also rumors of, like, lawsuits that Gordon's...
Yes, Gordon's was going to sue them, and this is all the talk that you used to hear around the Coliseum.
And then you had Part B, which was everybody said that the Fisherman logo looked, or the guy looked like Stan Fischler.
Right, yeah.
Fisherman, Fischler, get it,
yeah,
get it,
yeah,
get it.
Yeah, remember that, too.
Stan Fischler, some people said Jigs McDonald.
Yeah.
But it wasn't supposed to be either of those guys.
Right, exactly. But going on to that, now obviously, that change, there was so many things going on. Obviously the uniform was the thing. Then obviously the hiring of one Michael Milbury was the next big huge
mistake. I can hear John sighing in the background.
Yeah. On a personal level, dealing with the Booster Club and stuff like that, it was as tumultuous as other things going on. But obviously, everybody thought that he was such a, you know, he was going to have such a great start when the first press conference, he comes out and says, screw the Rangers, screw the Devils, I work for the Islanders, or whatever. And everything started was great. And then the instant after that happened, the honeymoon kind of ended?
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of funny for me to go back in the news coverage of the summer of 1995 before the Islanders hired Mike Milbury, and everybody was urging them, fans, columnists, the Daily News, Newsday, whatever, you need to get this guy Mike Milbury. You know, he'd taken the Bruins to the Stanley Cup Final, gritty former player, can whip these guys into shape. He had the name recognition from being on ESPN as an analyst. You know, you need to get this kind of a guy. It quickly went from a realization, I suppose, that when he was in Boston, he had great teams to lead. Not that he doesn't have talent as a coach, but it was kind of hard to mess up when you have that kind of roster. When he came into the Islanders, much different situation. You know, a mix of guys who are towards the ends of their careers, young guys that you need to coach in a certain way and be gentle with and massage their egos a little, which is not Mike Milbury's style. It definitely got unhinged pretty quick.
And then obviously, looking, you know, after that, it was the Kurt Muller situation, you know, where, you know, he didn't want to come here, he didn't want to play here, he didn't want anything to do with Long Island, and said it from day one, and, you know, was told, you know, you have to be here, and, you know, it was such a shame because obviously, you know, it was Pierre Turgeon that was moved at that time, and he was such a favorite, and to go from, again, happy times to disgusting times, if you will. You know, what did you get in your research regarding the Mueller situation?
So I think that's another thing where we got to look at perspective. At the time, Pierre Turgeon was not doing too hot for the Islanders. I know he would go on to do great things afterwards. And Kurt Mueller was viewed as a player who could bring a lot of leadership potential. You know, and the Stanley Cup veteran is going to be a good mentor for these young players. I don't think anybody expected that then he was not going to show up when he was traded. And it was an embarrassment for the entire organization, especially considering that almost every newspaper, newsletter that I read at the time used the exact phrase, like, he will show up every night. And then the first two games that the Islanders play after he's traded to them, he does not show up.
Right.
He's not even in the United States. He's still in Canada, upset about this trade. So, you know, and then obviously he didn't really want to be there. He clashed with Milbury, although that was not uncommon. And then it just became another embarrassing back page headline, and he became associated with that logo. And so people just started to hate the logo by association with guys like Milbury, Mueller, and trading away Pierre Turgeon, who became a star.
Now, during the course of your research, who were you able to, you know, to get in touch with, and, you know, what kind of stories did you get, just kind of the meat of things, that, you know, over that time period?
I spoke to 52 different people, from the guys who designed the logo, the guys who played Niles, the mascot, at the time.
Wow.
NHL executives who were involved in the rebrand, and, of course, a bunch of the players and coaches at the time. So spoke to guys like Darius Kasparaitis, Rich Pilon, Eric Bichot, Tommy Soderstrom, Dean Chenough, Travis Green, lots of those guys. And, you know, people were very forthcoming. I think that I learned, as people always say, hockey players are very polite. They give you lots of time. They are honest. So, of course, people are going to be diplomatic with some of these things, but I did get a lot of stories about what was happening in the locker room and how people really felt about Mike Milbury. and what they really felt about these jerseys. You know, was it, I was kind of curious from a fan perspective. Of course, we look at it and say, oh, that looks silly. But, you know, for a player, especially a lot of these guys who only played a season or two and that was the only jersey they ever knew, or maybe it was their first jersey in the NHL, the last one they ever wore for some of the journeymen on the team. So it has a lot of resonance with them. And it's something that they still hold dear. They have it framed in their homes and they talk about it very fondly.
That's what I was going to say. Were there a lot of were there guys that just, I guess, in the take of the interview, were you surprised with approval, not to say approval, but you know, positive thoughts about the uniform? I mean, we all know how the fans feel, but was there a lot of positivity coming out of the players?
Yeah, I mean, there were some players who definitely were joking about the fact that they would rather not wear it.
Right.
But I think that they were just placed in a difficult situation. What are you going to say? You know, you can't
True.
Criticize
that
the
makes
logo.
Sense. Right.
And so I think I kind of didn't know what to expect, but I thought that was an important part of the narrative here to share with the fans, is that, remember, for these guys, it's just an honor to play in the NHL. Even if the team is terrible, even if you have all these ownership changes, and of course this is also the John Spano era, when he buys the team and turns out to be a con artist. So, you know, there was a lot going on to be embarrassed about, but this is what these guys have been training for since they were kids. You know, they want to be NHL players, and this jersey represents the fact that they made it. They reached that highest level. And I think for the fans, and there were a bunch of fan quotes at times too, if they were winning, this jersey would have been flying off the shelves and people would have grown to like it.
That was going to be my question to you, is if things would have worked out, if the Islanders actually would have, let's just say, would have become a really good team and, you know, made some noise in the playoffs, we could be having a completely different conversation here.
Yeah. I mean, there were a few people quoted the opening night in 1995 when they wore the fisherman jerseys. I don't care if they wear tutus. I don't care if the jerseys are pink, as long as they're winning. And there are some patches of time, it's kind of hard to forget in the mix of horribleness that was happening in those two seasons, but there were some times when they were getting near playoff contention, and, you know, you have Ziggy Palfy on the team is really exciting, and
right.
a lot of these young stars, and people are getting a little excited, and you could see, you know, that there's interest in this, but I think it just became too bogged down with the baggage of Milbury and Muller and John Spano, and the Coliseum is leaking in the roof, and all that sort of stuff that just made it impossible to escape.
And when you think about it, too, obviously after the second season, you know, the Islanders relented and said, you know, we'll put, you know, the original logo on the Wave jersey. And you know, from my perspective, you know, I feel I was in the same situation as most of us. I didn't care if they wore pink. I don't care if what they wore. As long as they were my team and they were winning, everything was fine. And then they put the Islander logo on the Wave jersey, and I'll tell you, you know, I like the Wave colors. I like the style. I thought it was different. You know, it's just that name in the front that I'm smacking right now that just didn't do it for me. But and so they went in that, obviously, in that tangent, and that was like a year and a half. And then I guess with new ownership again, they said, well, let's go back to the original. And,
right.
You know. It just, to me, it's, you know, like you said, it's history. You know, it may not be, you know, favorable history, but it's history nevertheless. And, you know, does it seem strange to you that now when you look at it, for example, like group ads for the Islanders in 2017, that they're promoting the, you know, the retread jersey, you know, they're giving it out to groups. It's amazing how this thing can almost come full circle. And when you talk to a lot, I don't know in your research, but if you talk to a lot of the millennials now, they love it.
Yeah.
It's,
I think that for a lot of the millennials, right, they don't have that baggage associated with it. They don't remember when Milbury was coaching the team, where Spano became a fraud. They're just associating with, oh, this is a cool thing from the 90s when I was a kid, or maybe even before I was born in some cases for some people. So it's, you know, it's just a fun, nostalgic thing for them. And I guess it's not that surprising because the logo itself was designed by a top-notch design firm, SME, out of Manhattan, that had done a lot of big things for the World Series and the Florida Panthers logo, the Toronto Raptors logo. So this was not just some low-end, you know, basement firm in Garden City doing this. It was done by the best of the best. They knew some of what they were doing, and it just, the Gorton's comparison, the losing, started to send it down, but it's nice to see that their work is being appreciated, albeit decades later, by the younger fans and by the team now embracing it.
It's just, it's one of those things, it's just wrong place, wrong time scenarios, you know. It's like everything kind of added up, and it was almost as if the jersey became sort of like the focal point of fans' displeasure.
And Ranger fans. And, alike.
Well, Ranger fans picked on it, you know, which it was an easy target too, you know. So.
Well, that was another thing. Like you were talking before about the Gordon's Fisherman connection, obviously. But once that chant, "We want fish sticks," went up at Madison Square Garden, that's why I made that the title of the book. That just did it, right?
And yeah.
You have fans at Madison Square Garden. It's actually happened through Fish on the Ice. Matthew Schneider was skating around it. You know, talked to the media later about how upset he was to see that. That just adds a whole other element to it. There was a guy who was dressed up as the Gordon's Fisherman and walked around the aisles at an Islanders-Rangers game at the Garden. So that all just added to that embarrassment for sure.
So, Nick, in a couple of minutes we got left, we also, if you would just give us a couple of minutes and talk about your other book that you brought out regarding the Nassau Coliseum. We just give our listeners a little glimpse into that.
Sure. So that book came out in 2010, essentially a holistic look at the history of Nassau Coliseum. Of course, the Islanders are in there, but also looking at the concerts, and there was short-lived soccer team, tennis team. Obviously, the Nets were there when they won their championship. There were speeches there by two presidents, Nixon and Ford. So looking at all of those sorts of memories that people may forget, you know, the Coliseum had some of the greatest acts in music history. You know, Elvis was there, and Paul McCartney was there.
I didn't know Elvis was there, really.
Well, Elvis was supposed to play 2 days before after he died.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was his next show, was the Nassau Coliseum, so it's...
Yeah. And before that, he did actually...
He did play there, yes.
And there was actually a shrine there. After Elvis died, fans came out there and put a makeshift shrine outside Nassau Coliseum. So I think, you know, that was another thing for me, is that Nassau Coliseum always got kind of lost in the shuffle of the New York sports venues. You know, you have tons of books about Yankee Stadium and Madison Square Garden, and well-deserved. But I felt it's worth it to take a look at this building, especially at a time when, you know, you go back to 2009, 2010, this is, you know, the Lighthouse of Long Island project is being pitched, and everyone's just saying that the Coliseum is so outdated, it needs to be replaced, and I, at least, as a fan, always like to go in there and think about its history, and its intimacy, and the sidelines, and all of the positives that we forget about that building.
Yeah, exactly. Nick, have you been to the new building since it's been reopened?
Yeah, I've been there a few times.
What do you think?
I mean, you know, they preserved the sidelines. I wish that they hadn't cut down on the seating so much, just because it really hampers, I think, the sort of acts we're going to get now.
Yeah.
You know, whether they're going to get the Islanders on an interim basis, and it may affect how many games they get of theirs. But I was there for the preseason game. Very exciting atmosphere when they won back in September.
Mm-hmm.
And, I just wish that they would get something more than minor league basketball. It seems sad that when the Coliseum was built, it was really supposed to be Long Island arriving. We can compete with Madison Square Garden in the city. You don't need to go out there anymore. We're going to get the best here. And now we're back to, well, you know, got some pretty good musical acts, but you're going to see the next players in the G League, and that just doesn't seem to be befitting
Again, you know, and we've said it all along, you know, as, you know, on our blogs and on the past shows, I'm thrilled with John Ledecky, and, you know, he's got the right plan to move the Islanders into a new territory, and I'll tell you, I can't wait for Belmont to happen.
Yeah, I think that's part of the history of the Islanders that's very obvious. They really needed their own arena where they're going to derive revenue not only from their own events, but the concerts that come in, the circus, the wrestling, whatever. And I think this is obviously a bright move for the Islanders. It's a little sad that they will probably never return to Nassau Coliseum on a full-time basis, but they're coming back to Long Island. They're going to have their own place. They won't have to be in a basketball arena with obstructed views anymore.
Or play in Seattle or anywhere else.
Right.
Yeah, that's true, too.
So listen, Nick, we know that, you know, with this book, you know, We Want Fish Sticks, is going to be coming out late in the fall, if I'm not correct, right?
Yep, it's coming out in December.
Okay,
yep.
So... But if anybody wants to get the book on the Nassau Coliseum, they definitely can get it through Amazon. Is there other outlets that they can find it, or is that the best place?
Yeah, that's probably the best place. Images of America, Nassau Veterans Memorial Coliseum. It's from Arcadia Publishing, 2010. You can get it on Amazon or the Arcadia website. The We Want Fish Sticks book will come out in December, although you might be able to pre-order it a little bit earlier, and that's from University of Nebraska Press.
Okay,
cool. It'll be on Amazon at some point, too, for sure.
Awesome.
Well, listen, Nick, we really appreciate you coming on tonight and talking about this, and we definitely cannot wait for the book to come out in the fall.
Yeah, I really.
And we'll have you come back.
Yeah, we'll definitely have you come back on
in the fall. We get closer to the book coming out, and I know you're a partial ticket holder at the Bark, and hopefully we'll catch you at the Bark before the season ends.
Yeah, love to see you guys there, and thanks a lot for the time. It was really fun.
All right, take care, Nick. Thanks again.
Take care, guys.
All right, so that was Nick Hirshon. Again, I'm really looking forward to this book.
I know, I am too.
It is a lot of crazy times. And again, you know, right before, you know, Fish Sticks is when Claire and I started dating and that. So, you know, that was a whole big thing, you know, that we lived through and dealt with.
And, like I said, we were season ticket holders back then, and it's so vivid in my mind, that whole time period.
And, you know, like I said, I went up to my attic to get this jersey out, and you know, and Claire's actually giving me dirty looks going, "Do you really have to do this?" But I did, because it's history, you know. I mean, there's a lot of other garbage jerseys that came out in that time, you know. The Kings had one that looked like it was some character on acid, and you know, there's some other bad ones that came out. So it wasn't just the Islanders, but you know, it's part of history, and it always will be a part of history. Like it, love it, or whatever, it's going to be. Oh, and by the way, John, just so you know, with 10 seconds left, the Vikings won on a 61-yard walk-off touchdown, so they beat the Saints 29-24.
Wow.
So the Vikings will go to Philadelphia next Sunday, and the Jags play in New England. So it's going to be an interesting football weekend next Sunday. So we're going to definitely take a break here and pay some bills. If you want to give us a call, the number to reach us here is 631-888-8811. John and Gary here for the next half hour on Sports Talk 1240. Make sure you come back and check us out.